It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, a Wisconsin man tells us how he tried to conceal his blindness and masquerade as a sighted person.
First, we take a look at a different angle on global warming. Our next guest sees a paradox when it comes to climate change. Even as warnings get more dire and scientists try to sound the alarm, people don't take action or change their behavior, even though they may accept climate change as a reality.
Per Espen Stoknes is with us now. He's a clinical psychologist, economist, and business professor at the Norwegian Business School. He's also the author of What We Think About When We Try Not to Think About Global Warming, Toward a New Psychology of Climate Action. Per Espen, welcome to Central Time.
Great being with you, Veronica.
Well, in general, how do you think people are responding to the issues of climate change?
Well, the surveys are pretty clear. They are not getting much more concerned right now. They're drawing a big yawn, actually. And so my work starts with the mystery of the psychological climate paradox. That is that back since 1989, we've had more and more facts and more information about how serious it is, but we have a declining concern. So on average, people were more concerned about climate change in 1989 than we are today. But that's peculiar to the U.S., Canada, U.K., and Norway, among all places. So this means that understanding the human responses to climate news is clearly becoming just as important as understanding the climate change itself.
Now, we'll focus on the people who are receiving all this information in a moment. But first, what about the scientists? Are the scientists communicating as effectively as they could? They might not be the best people to communicate with the public.
You're quite right. They had this belief in just getting information out to the people, and then if the facts in their eyes become clear enough, then the people would eventually agree with the consensus of the scientists. But that's not how humans seem to perceive this thing. So we have these kind of psychological defenses that are coming up, both because of the climate issue itself and also in particular because of the way it's been framed or the way we talk about it. For instance, with climate change has been described as something far off into the future, the 2100, but, you know, who really cares that far out in time? It's also, you know, typically described as happening in the Arctic with polar bears or floods in Pakistan or cyclones in the Pacific, which is way far away from us. And finally, it's happening to somebody else, and the responsibility to do something with it, it's also way out of my scope of influence. All these things make climate seem distant to us.
Right, and you write about these things as of the five psychological barriers, you call them, to climate action, the five Ds. Let's start with distance. We hear about polar bears all the time. They're a charismatic face to have on the climate change issue, but for whatever reason, they might not be working as they once did. Why is it that the distance sets us thinking less about it?
Yeah, the distance makes it feel less personal, less relevant, and also scientists have been fond of talking about PPMs, that means parts per million of CO2, and sea level rise in inches per decade, and temperature rise and surface temperature about, you know, in a century. And all these ways of speaking puts up a long distance between what I perceive as important to me and my friends and my family and our community and the climate issue. So it makes the climate difficult to kind of get a grasp on, particularly if too much doom is used to describe the climate. So it's typically been said that if we don't change now, then we'll burn in the future. And this type of apocalyptic messaging actually backfires. We don't want to sacrifice today in order to have some salvation far into the future. And rather than becoming more engaged, the doom messaging makes us avoid the topic. We typically quickly learn to think about or filter it out.
That one is interesting, because you would expect that if we hear these dire messages, we would leap into action and change our behavior and lobby politicians for whatever we think is best. But in fact, we're not. So what is the right approach to take if it's not, you know, hey, look at these dire consequences?
Yeah, that message generates fear and guilt and maybe some anger. And all these things make us not want to engage in a sustained way. So if you want people to engage in a sustained way, you have to make it feel much nearer, more personal, more urgent, and then use more positive framing, such as this is all to do about the health of people, pollen allergies or respiratory diseases that we have today. And also we should talk about risk and insurance handling, risk management and insurance, rather than this being very uncertain and far off into the future. Because we do this all the time with defense and theft and fire. We pay for insurance in order to be ready if it did happen. And one third frame we could use for it is the opportunity frame, because as climate change comes along, it generates much more conducive conditions for distributed energy generation, better insulated homes, and much smarter resource productivity use in production and consumption. And there are huge opportunities and large sums of money to be made in climate-smart city infrastructure.
We're talking right now with Per Espen Stoknes. He's the author of What We Think About When We Try Not to Think About Global Warming, talking about the ways in which people fail to connect with the issue of global warming. And one of these is guilt, when people hear about things they shouldn't be doing, driving cars that are not fuel efficient, eating beef, for instance. What is it about using guilt that doesn't work?
Yeah, the issue is that if I know what I'm supposed to do, but then I have a lifestyle based on habits and infrastructure from the previous century, the 20th century, then we experience what we call dissonance. I know what I should do, but I do something else. And that makes us feel a bit lousy and maybe as hypocrites. And then our minds quickly come up with ways to get rid of this dissonance. And, for instance, if I doubt that message, if I doubt the experts, oh, well, you know, the climate's always changed, or I say that it hasn't really warmed since the year 1998, then it makes me feel better because I can continue living exactly as I do without any worry or feeling bad about it. So that's one of the main barriers. This dissonance creates a backlash on the science, climate science message. Therefore, it's very important to give people much more simpler way of behaving climate friendly. So if there are electric bikes that can help you get to job quicker than with a car, or if there are all the printers default print by two-sided rather than one-sided, if aeroplane tickets come with a carbon offset included, or if household appliances show the life cycle cost rather than the sales price, then it's much easier for us to do the right thing or buy the right thing. So you could say the problem is that we do mindlessly destructive choices, but the good news is that if we use nudging or behavioral economics, we can do mindless and constructive choices.
And how do we make this better? What are some of the solutions to overcoming these barriers?
Yeah. The new strategy that I'm describing builds on psychological research that we are evidence-based. We know work. And first, we need to turn these barriers upside down so we see them as success criteria. And then we need more positive strategies. We know more of these save the planet, go kill yourself messages. We have to stimulate the glow, and the flow, and the community experience and the fun. And we should act as social citizens, not as individuals. One core strategy is to use the power of social networks. What I mean by that? Well, if one house in a neighborhood gets solar panels on their roof, well, then suddenly the houses near to it have a much higher likelihood of getting solar panels as well. So solar panels is an instance of a behavior that seems contagious. And another example I like is the Green Sports Alliance, which now greens sports events such as baseball, football, soccer, or even car racing. And when people see their sports heroes, their stars, in green events and behave more green, then they want to do this so with themselves. So this has to do with what we call social norms, what we think other people would aspire to be like, are actually doing.
Per Espen, thank you so much for joining us.
Great being with you. This was most important topic.
We've been speaking with Per Espen Stoknes. He's the author of What We Think About When We Try Not to Think About Global Warming Toward a New Psychology of Climate Action.